What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. This is episode number 114. I'm Jared, here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Today, we're going to be smoking and talking all about the upcoming UFC 267, headlined by two title fights, Jan Blachowicz versus Glover Teixeira for the 205-pound championship, and Peter Yan versus Corey Sandhagen for the interim 135-pound championship. We're going to be discussing the upcoming PFL finals. The million-dollar fights are here, plus some Nate Diaz news and a look at the state of boxing's heavyweight division. Before we dive into the combat sports, though, you know what time it is. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's dive into the weed of the week. This week, folks, we are smoking on two familiar strains. If you've been tuning in this month, we still have got the Tropia Pie, and we have brought back the Diamond OG today. Now, next week, we're going to be getting some new strains. But if you haven't heard these two before, we'll go over them real quick. The Tropia Pie is a little bit of a, well, not a little bit, it's a very rare strain. We've got a cross of Tropia and an unknown. Tropia is Papaya, crossed with Tropicana cookies. Mm-hmm. And then a mystery strain asked to the other. What does this weed smell like to you?
Candy.
It really, truly does.
Yeah, like literally smells like pie. Like it smells like something sugary.
It's one of the more unique smelling herbs I've ever had. Mm-hmm. It's pretty stony as well. You can kind of taste that smell on the inhale, mm-hmm. I find. And we've got the Diamond OG, which is a phenotype of OG Kush and something else that I am not aware of. So both of them have a little bit mystery genetics, as we've discussed on prior episodes. Next week, we'll get a couple new strains for everybody to hear about while we're puffing down. Mm-hmm. What do you want to start with today, my friend? UFC, PFL, boxing?
Let's kick it back. Let's start with a little bit of Fedor. How about that?
Dude, how about Fedor Emelianenko versus, Timothy Johnson?
Timothy Johnson, yeah.
Last week in Bellator, heavyweight fight. Short work.
Yeah, and I thought it was like a real, real step up in, I guess, obviously a step down in competition for Fedor, but I think it was like, it almost felt like put him right back into the conversation almost. It was weird.
Well, like, Johnson's not an expired fighter. Though. He's not an over-the-hill type guy, which mm-hmm. is kind of who he's been fighting lately. You know, Frank Mir is a little bit past his expiration date. Timothy Johnson is active in the Bellator heavyweight rankings.
Yeah.
You know, and for that league, he's good. Mm-hmm. I don't think he'd be top 10 in the UFC anymore. But
no.
That's fine. Fedor doesn't need to be fighting those people, right?
No. I think Fedor is fighting the perfect opponents, but I feel like that performance put him, like, on the next level. Whereas, like, people kind of thought this should have been his last fight. I wouldn't mind seeing him fight a few more times after the performance he put on.
It was enjoyable. I always like watching Fedor fight, but at some point, I feel the show's got to end. And for me, I'm not too sad if he goes out this way with a nice, you know, it was a nice 1-2-3 combo, mm-hmm. walk off against a respected Bellator heavyweight for the most part.
Yeah.
Good show, man.
Would be a good way to walk off for sure. Into the sunset.
At some point,
gotta. I mean, how old is he now? He's got to be almost 50, huh?
He seems ancient. I've been hearing about Fedor, it seems, my whole life.
Yeah. Literally. He's got to be up there, like 47-ish, something like that.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me.
But, yeah. Hell of a performance by Fedor, and we'll see what happens next for him, honestly. Now let's talk about the UFC card over the weekend. We had Paulo Costa and Marvin Vettori in a 5-round main event. A
lot of controversy over this main event.
Yeah, well, let's take a step back and talk about kind of what happened earlier in the week before we necessarily talk about the punches and kicks.
Yeah, in case folks haven't heard, there was major weight-cutting issues for Paulo Costa.
Yeah, some were saying that he showed up to fight week somewhere around like 230, 240.
for a 185
pound. 185 pound pout. Craziness.
And what is about 40 hours or so before the fight, he issues a statement to the UFC saying he can't make weight.
Yeah.
And then what, Vittori agrees to what,
195.
195?
Yeah. Which he also cannot make.
Yeah, then it comes out later he can't make 195, so they bump it up to
light heavyweight.
205.
Mm-hmm.
And before we talk about the fight itself, afterwards Dana White came out and said that on fight night they weighed them both. Did you see that?
Mm-mm.
And Vittori was 208 and Costa was 222.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's nuts. That dude's not a middleweight. That's just what it comes down to.
Well, and he didn't even handle it with any type of class. Like, he refused to take any responsibility. Every time he
constantly
spoke,
made jokes about it.
Yeah, leading up to it, every time he spoke, he was saying bizarre things where it made it sound like it was on Vittori.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care what fight the weight's contested at. Vittori can show up at 230, 215, mm-hmm. 205. I don't care. I just want to fight.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the issue. The issue is you're not on weight, you motherfucker.
Exactly.
I have a real problem with that.
Oh, me too. You know I do.
Yeah. And I get the other side. There were several people saying that what we ended up with was good. It was two people who should be at 205 who didn't cut weight and got together and fought. And from that aspect of it, yeah, I could agree. Mm-hmm. The sport would be better if everybody just did that. If Costa was just 205 and so was Vittori and all these 205ers were just fucking heavyweights.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that way. And you sign a contract to fight at a particular weight. And half that shit is getting to that weight.
Yeah.
So, fuck something, you,
well,
Paulo Costa.
Not only that, and also, like, something that Vittori said in the face-off after the weigh-in, he yelled in his face, you lost this fight on the scale.
Yeah, for sure.
And I agree with that. You know, there's a mental aspect to cutting weight that a lot of people don't really focus on enough. You know what I mean? People, the size is one thing, but there's a mental aspect of cutting weight that turns you into a whole nother person mentally.
Yeah, like, people who haven't done it don't know. We've both been there and done that.
The amount of locked in, like, when people say you're locked in, like, when you have no, when you have no moisture in your body and you're still 3 pounds over and you fucking have to find a way, that's getting locked in. You know what I mean? Like, that's locking in. And for Vittori, that's got to feel like he was locked in all week where, you know, Costa just seems like he, like we were talking about before, it just kind of seemed like he thought it was kind of a joke to show up on weight, which is fucked up.
You know what was a joke is that Vittori's manager, Ali, mm-hmm. Abdulaziz, this fucking guy, gets him the bare minimum fight purse from Costa, 20%.
Yeah,
I've seen it as high as 30 pretty often.
Well, we're talking about a situation where we're talking about maybe missing weight twice because he said originally it was 195, then it ends up as 205. So.
And how is it fair at all to Marvin Vittori, who I'm assuming is on a win and show pay structure? I don't even know if he gets the show money if he turned that fight down, does he?
I doubt it. Well, that's the thing, is they never technically weighed in, so you can't really. It'd be the same idea of, like, your opponent pulled out. When your opponent pulls out, do they pay you show money? Nope. Probably not, you know, but depending on the fighter, obviously. But
right.
You know what I'm saying. If so anybody pulls out, it'd be, like, the same thing.
He's put in this position where, at best, he would only get half of his pay.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of forced to agree to take a fight with a guy broke the rules, didn't do what he was contracted to do. I mean, forced but not forced. I mean,
yeah,
no one broke his arm, but what, you're not going to get paid? Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, what is he supposed to do? He paid for a fucking fight camp.
Exactly.
Like,
and he's at one of the biggest gyms in the world, so.
Right, and like everybody else on the planet, the man has bills. You know, a lot of these guys, they look at, you know, like Ngannou came out again talking about his fucking pay.
Yeah.
Right? And that he had to fucking borrow money for fight camp. Did you see that shit?
Yeah.
And I heard a lot of people talking shit because they just go back and they look at, you know, the disclosed payday from his last fight and they're like, oh, he got $500,000.
$500,000, well, ain't shit in this world, dude. Like, people don't realize when you're living when you're living a lifestyle where you own your home and you owe all, you have fucking have managers, coaches, drilling partners you're paying to bring in, like, everything is probably in a fight
two
camp.
Governments taxing him. He gets taxed here in America. He's going to get taxed at the state. He's probably getting taxed by the feds.
Yeah.
And then he's not an American citizen, to the best of my knowledge, is he?
I think he is now, actually.
Is he? Well, then he's saving some tax money. But if he was still someone like these other guys who are in other countries, they pay their fucking taxes when they get home, too.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, is, like, he's in a situation, like, whether it's personal or it's not the UFC's fault or however people want to view it, he's in a situation where he's trying to save his family and get them out of a situation that they're in as well.
Right.
And that shit is not fucking cheap.
No, it's not.
It's not.
So these clowns that come out and say, oh, these guys just can't manage their money because they get
paid. Also
like,
trying
y'all don't
to,
know shit. You don't know anything that's going
exactly.
on. You have no. You don't know what his debts are. You don't know what his cost of living is.
His legal fees. Yeah.
You don't know what his family fucking needs. He has no idea about anything.
Yeah.
And
here's the thing, too. It's $500,000 is a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but $500,000 is also, like I just said, he just bought
a
home.
A lot of money relative to what?
Yeah, like relative, exactly.
Yeah.
It all, like, depends on how, not necessarily how you live your lifestyle, but how, what your expenses are, you know what I mean? Like, if you're someone who just bought a house, you're literally settling in a new country, like, there's definitely costs that come with that. And for people to not realize why these guys have come out as of late and talked about fighter pay so much, it's like this cost of living in this fucking everywhere is goes up, up, and up, and all the everything is so expensive that this bullshit that they're getting paid by the UFC was cool and fine in 2006, but in 2020 things got to change, motherfuckers. Like
right, and that ties into Vettori and this weight cutting thing. Because it affects his paycheck. It's ridiculous.
It just makes
and
no
sense.
And
it's not fair that Paulo Costa gets to fuck off with his weight and Vettori's deciding that, well, no matter what, I only get half my pay or maybe even no pay because we don't know. So,
well,
circling back to him and Costa, just incredibly unprofessional behavior all the way up to the
all
fight
the way up,
and after. Now he's talking about his bicep injury.
His foot was a balloon.
Foot.
All this shit. Supposedly he's saying that his foot was a balloon, which is why he couldn't cut weight. And then his bicep injury is why he couldn't knock him out. So who knows?
When he lost to Adesanya, he was up drinking wine the night before.
Whole bottle. Not just one glass, Jared. A whole bottle of wine.
Have you heard that joke as to why he fucking came in overweight?
Uh-uh.
Well, he couldn't lose the baby fat after giving birth since Adesanya impressed him last fucking fight.
Put some weight on since the kid, huh?
Yeah. Losing that fucking birth weight, man.
You see what Adesanya said?
No.
During the fight, he was like, man, this is a good fucking fight, but they both suck.
I did hear Costa. Oh, well, let's talk about the fight.
Before
we get into what they said afterwards. It was actually a decent fight.
Yeah, it was a really good fight.
He put all the
highly,
bullshit aside.
Yeah.
It was a good fight.
Highly competitive. A real situation where we're talking about quality versus quantity when you're talking about judging the fight. Because we've seen in the past, just looking back at like Costa's fight against Yoel Romero, I think it's very similar to that, where it was like in that fight, Costa was throwing more shots where Romero was landing better shots. The opposite happened here. I thought Costa probably landed, if you look at like the overall fight, Costa probably landed the most significant strikes.
He was
like,
dropping bombs.
Yeah. But Vettori's pace and his ability to control the octagon, have Costa on his back foot the whole time, and still hit him with good shots as well, I think was really the difference. You know, I think it really came down to who was controlling the fight because both guys were cracking. It just came down to who had the control.
Costa threw everything with bad intentions, and I thought he was gassed after the first round. Well, he was, but he actually managed to hang in there. His conditioning did hold up, where in that fifth round, he still wound up being fairly active for how gassed he was in the second round. I mean, I thought he was going to be done after that. And, I think everything you just said is correct. It's just a shame that we had to have all that pre-fight to kind of shit all over the aftermath of the fight. Because normally, if there hadn't been all this drama, Costa would still come out of this looking okay, losing.
Yeah.
You know, he just lost to the guy who fought for the title, and yeah, back to back, yeah, but it was a good fight. He looked decent. Dropped fucking. I mean, Vittori's got a chin. Like,
yeah, he's got a strong body too. Because he ripped him with some body kicks. I want to say it was in the fourth or fifth. He finally like winced, because I'm talking, he was doing this good setup too, where he was like throwing a straight, and Vittori would bring his hands up a little bit because both guys were kind of fighting with their hands down. Mm-hmm. But then when the strikes were being thrown, it was kind of more like reaction based defense. Rather than putting up a wall and, like, you know, absorbing shots. And he freaking caught Vittori flush with a body kick. And you could hear it because, you know, with those small crowds, you hear those big shots land. And the thud, I thought he was going to finish him from there because even if he finally got Vittori to be like, whoa, 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 whoa. Which I think anybody would, obviously.
The total strike count wound up being, you know, fairly close. It was 190. For Vittori, 163 for Costa, and they both had a takedown. But you did see a lot of control coming from Vittori. And I didn't have any problem with the decision. I thought he went handily. Plus, you had a point taken away from Costa as well. After the fight, though, instead of showing some class and maybe even making some apologies for not making weight, just more bullshit from Paulo Costa. Dana says he's staying at 205. Costa says, oh, no, he's going to go not till he gets that belt at 185. Just a joke. It's never going to happen.
No.
Unless Adesanya has a car accident, bro.
Yeah. I think he has a better chance of getting the belt at 205 than he does 185.
Far better chance. Because he can't beat the guy that couldn't beat the guy.
I mean, yeah.
He just got handled by Vittori, who just got handled by Adesanya, who handled Costa. I mean,
yeah, true.
He circled back around now.
But here's the thing. I do think he's got a better puncher's chance at light heavyweight than he does at middleweight. I think the guys at middleweight that he's going up against are a lot, not necessarily skilled, but I think there's just a difference when you fight guys where, I know it's not that crazy of a weight difference, but 20 pounds is 20 pounds, you know what I mean? Like, people
significant
at light heavyweight are a little bit slower than your middleweights, you know, your traditional middleweights Adesanya and people like that. There's just a different speed at which they fight that I think at 205, I think it favors Costa rather than at 185, where I feel like that's his biggest weakness.
He's not going to be depleted either.
Yeah, he can get juiced up.
I think it would be best for him. And I don't care what he says. If Dana says you're at 205, you're at 205, or they're not going to give you a contract to fight, bro.
Yeah, I one person I could like maybe compare him to would maybe like a Thiago Santos, you know, like who would... Mm-hmm. Who had like mixed results at 85, but then when he got put some more size on, he fit in perfectly at 205. And I think Costa is going to be cut along the same lines.
You know, on the same card, moving on to one other fight that kind of stood out for me, just real quick, was Alex Caceres fought on this card. Mm-hmm. The nice come from behind victory. I mean, he got knocked down, then he fights back, he gets the sub against Sungwoo Choi.
Yeah,
who's a solid fighter. Mm-hmm. I enjoy Caceres. He's made a nice career for himself coming off the Ultimate Fighter. Never really a contender, you know.
Yeah,
he's come up. We got there in the conversation a couple times, but then fell off. But he's a steady, fun fighter to watch. A little bit of a personality, and he's still getting, you know, solid subs and wins after facing some adversity. And I enjoyed that fight as well.
One last note, though, on the the main event.
No.
No more notes?
No.
But Vittori is kind of in no man's land, though, like, as far as his career. Like, that was a big win, but, like, nobody's clamoring for him versus Adesanya a third time.
Dear God, no.
You know what I mean?
He doesn't deserve a rubber match there.
Which is why I don't really know what he does at 85 anymore, because I do think he's good enough to beat all those guys, but I don't think he's ever going to be good enough to beat
Israel. You could just put on some size and go up to 205 as well.
He's a little bit shorter, though. I don't know.
Pretty solid.
Think so?
I mean, he always seemed big until this last fight. He was noticeably smaller than
Costa,
But, I mean, Costa was preparing the entire time to not make weight, where Vittori had been cutting through the whole fucking week.
That is true.
And fight camp prior. I mean, clearly Costa never had any intentions because he obviously had to do a last-minute cut in order to get some weight off just to get to fucking 205 if he weighs 222 the next night. He's still cut.
He was looking for an open weight belt.
Yeah, like this fucking guy.
Yeah. Well, I think that about rounds out the fight night and everything that happened last weekend. One thing before we get to the pay-per-view I want to talk about a little bit is during the week we also saw a little chatter between Nate Diaz and Tony Ferguson and Conor McGregor. All kind of shooting shots back and forth on Twitter. And it seems like either some mixture of those three are going to fight each other next.
I just thought of something that's mean, especially because I'm literally a fan of all three men. Mm-hmm. But that's a bunch of guys who nobody's want to fight in a hot fucking minute, huh? I mean,
probably Nate. Nate's
on back-to-back losses. He hasn't won a fight since 2019, Anthony Pettis. We're kind of at the end of 2021. Conor hasn't, I mean, he got that little win over Cerrone. Ferguson's, you know, we've all seen that happen.
Yeah.
It's just weird because they're all top-level fighters.
Top-level guys.
Guys that names are known across the MMA world closely. And they're, like, if you added up all their combined losses lately, that's a, probably a significant fucking number.
Yeah, I want to say they're probably 0-7.
Yeah, it's nothing too
combined.
Too good there.
Nate's lost 2, Connor's lost 2, and Tony's lost 2 or 3.
And Connor's got a win in there against Cerrone, but
yeah, but back to back to Poirier, so that's 2 losses in a row.
Well, back to back, with the other one was 2014 or whatever.
No, I'm saying he lost the second fight.
Oh, the second, yeah.
Trying to fucking forget it, huh?
Yeah, I tried to block that shit out of my head. But anyways, that's a like an asshole would say that's a bunch of losers trying to fight each other.
But yeah,
I'm not that asshole. But it's crazy to think about how many losses they have versus wins.
True.
I mean, shit.
It's been a while, huh?
But yeah, that is an interesting thing. What do you think of all that? What do you want to see? Connor said some shit, huh?
Connor went all over the place. He's throwing shots at everyone and seeing which ones land, you know?
He's picked up that John Jones habit. That I'm going to say something pretty outrageous in a tweet, and then I'm going to delete it real quick.
Delete it, yeah.
And then the internet talks about it.
The people screenshot it and repost it.
And who are those people that are sitting there waiting for the Conor McGregor notification to come up on their phone so they can grab a quick screenshot?
Oh, not the screenshot, but
I get the waiting for the notification, but who's screenshotting that in case he deletes it so they can do it? Like, ha-ha, look. That's weird to me, but whatever
you
like
to
do.
It's your tweets, brother. But and then Tony throws, you know, his normal shots back, and Nate always throws these vague tweets out that aren't necessarily like shots at anyone, but they're pretty clear, like shots at people. Which is classic Nate Diaz.
Tony's shit is weird. Where did he seize on this McNuggets? I don't understand why he calls Conor McGregor McNuggets. Like, that's not clever, it's not funny. What does McDonald's shit have to do with Conor?
I don't know.
Like you could say a lot about Conor McGregor, but you cannot call the man a chicken. I mean, if that's the reference, like if you're trying to imply that he's like scurred,
I don't think so.
Has Conor been scurred to fight anybody ever?
Yeah. No,
he don't give a fuck. He'll fight the DJ in the goddamn bar.
He did.
He'll try to get fucking
punch an old man
Khabib
for
off
not
the bus.
A shot.
You know what I mean? He'll fight anybody on short notice. Never turn down a fight. I mean, you can call him whatever you want, but
chicken's definitely
the
not,
chicken
yeah.
thing. It
doesn't really hold.
I mean, he went back and wanted more fucking Khabib after he got his ass kicked the first
time.
He got
fucking destroyed. He still wants to fight.
Like, Jesus, dude.
Yeah.
So, anyways, do you think any of those fights are going to happen?
I think they're the only fights that make sense for each other. If you really look at it, like. Maybe Connor's kind of more out of it than the other two just because of the leg injury and who knows what the timetable for his return is. But I do think Nate Diaz and Tony Ferguson makes a lot of sense.
That'd be a pretty exciting fight. I think that would be the fight to make because, yeah, Connor's definitely still on crutches. And who knows what weight he's going to be. He's looking swole lately.
Dude, what the fuck
him?
Is – yeah. In a good way.
He's commented about it. He's like, all I can do is lift weights, so that's what I do.
That's what I do. Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Mr. Upper body.
Yeah.
Jesus. I'm gonna come back at 185. 5'9", 185.
Yeah, right.
But Ferguson versus Diaz would be a fun fight.
I think that's the only fight that makes any sense for those
two. Versus Sal. SoCal.
Mm-hmm. Do it in California. That'd be cool.
They won't do it in California.
Why not?
The UFC could have had Nate Diaz headline UFC 209, and they could have done that in California, and they didn't do that. They're not going to do it now.
That's true. Well, no, the only reason I say that is because they have that Anaheim card coming up where they have Moreno and Figueiredo 3 as the main event. They could probably sneak Tony and Nate in there on the main card or as the co-main.
I mean, the fan in me would love all of these things, but I don't count the UFC to do anything that makes any sense for anything that fans would really like or
give a fuck about.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
Connor. Paul. I love Conor McGregor as a fighter. I find him a very interesting personality. I think he's a hell of a businessman. I find that all inspirational. I don't even mind his antics. Like the punch in the DJ thing. Like, I don't really care because I saw that guy's picture on fucking Instagram and shit. Like, he's going to the news sites, lifting his lip up and holding his boo-boo. It's not like he's egregiously beating people and putting them in the fucking ER or something. I mean, the guy got smacked up. I don't really care. Because Connor is a big boy who can write a big check, and I think he knows that, right? But, dude, I don't know if I really want to see him fight anymore, man.
Really? At all?
I'm just not fucking into it, dude. I wasn't into the second Poirier fight. I wasn't into the third Poirier fight.
Yeah. Can't necessarily disagree with you. Like, it's not that I don't want to see him fight anymore, but it really is a situation where you really don't have anything else to prove. Like, and all you do if you lose is hurt your legacy more.
That's what keeps happening. And it's not that he's not as skilled and doesn't have all that talent base or whatever, but it goes back to, like, I mean, look at Dustin Poirier, how he spent the last few years. Look how Conor McGregor spent the last few years. Dustin's hungry in the goddamn gym, bro.
Every day of his life, yeah.
And I'm not saying Conor probably trains every day, too, but he trains on his fucking yacht or in his billion-dollar home. I mean, the dude is ridiculously paid, and kudos to him for it. But can you still compete with these fucking lions that are hungry?
Yeah, but these people are just dogs.
Motherfuckers are starving in the gym.
Yeah.
Fucking, I don't know. I usually think, no, you can't.
That's why I think it's, I don't know. That's why I don't think it's smart for him to be jawing back and forth with people like Volkanovski, too. Like, that's not a fight I think he wants.
Oh, man.
Volkanovski, I think, would eat him alive.
He'd fucking tear him. He'll fucking... You thought Chad Mendes was taking him down.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was a featherweight, could he sleep Volk? Yeah, probably. Well, Volk's got a chin and a half.
Yeah, I don't think he could,
taking
him
fucking big man rugby hits, so yeah, I don't think not.
He could.
I don't want to see any of these fights anymore. I'd be more interested to see Conor go box somebody, frankly.
Yeah, honestly. Rather see him boxing than...
And I don't mean Canelo, because he's going to kick his ass too. But I mean, go try to do something else for a minute that doesn't maybe require so much.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't think you have to give anymore.
That is true.
So.
But honestly, I can kind of say that about all three of these guys. Like, Tony Ferguson, kind of the same thing. Like, he was... had this great streak, but now he's, 37 years old, and he's lost two or three in a row, and they haven't been very competitive.
He's the least paid of all the three. Of all three of these guys we're talking about, Tony has the least amount of money, I guarantee you.
Well, yeah, because he's been fucked over in so many situations. Mm-hmm.
He hasn't got those big paydays.
Mm-hmm.
And
his biggest fight was probably against Cowboy.
He doesn't have, Nate Diaz has this outsized personality that he can cash in on, which I assume he fucking does with his clothing line and his weed strains and their fucking gyms. Maybe they're not millionaires over and over, but they're more paid than Tony. And Connor's not even in the conversation.
Yeah.
I mean.
But Nate's pretty paid too. And Nate's in the same camp where it's just like, I've seen the Nate Diaz fights. I know the legacy. I know the grit. I know the fucking, the Rocky story of Nate Diaz.
And he's not out learning any new moves.
There's just no evolution. And I feel like that's where all three guys have kind of been are in the same rut. Is Connor is the same guy we saw when he in Madison Square Garden when he knocked out Eddie Alvarez. But the difference between Conor now and then is his hunger. Mm-hmm. Tony Ferguson is that same guy that we saw fucking tear through the lightweight division. But I think injury problems and age have caught up to him.
He's fucking
and
40.
Nate Diaz is that fucking same dude, same 19-year-old kid who's putting people in triangles and flipping them off. But the game is moved by his style. His style worked when fucking jiu-jitsu was a different game than it is now. You know, like his ability to take punches and be like, fuck it, let's go on the ground, I'm going to choke your ass out. Everyone can do that now. Everyone can. And that's just... that's just an unfortunate fact of like fighting, and these three guys are and these three guys are literally three of my favorite fighters of all time.
Absolutely.
And it just fucking, it's just one of those situations where it's not that I don't want to see them fight anymore. It's I don't think they have anything left to prove, and there's just nothing, but it's like a lose lose for them whether they win or not, because it's like if they win they're supposed to win, if they lose it's you're washed, which I don't think any of them are washed, but there's definitely situations where they're not really they really shouldn't be in title fights anytime soon. Yeah, either of the three.
No. No, those days are gone. I don't want to see that. I don't even want to see Nate fight like fucking Vicente Luque, really.
I think that's a bad fight for Nate.
Me too. Like, I don't want to see
Dustin
like,
Poirier, I think, is a bad fight for Nate too.
Yeah.
Keeps trying to jot Dustin Poirier. I don't think that's a good fight at all.
I'd like to see him fight Conor. That's a fight that I think makes sense. They have that trilogy there. Both those guys, you know what they're going to do. They're going to stand there and slug it out and kick it out.
Yeah. Same thing with Tony. I'd like to see him fight Tony just because him and Tony have had so much like back and forth over the years that has just never materialized into anything.
And they're both in similar spots.
Yeah, professionally.
Professionally. So, we'll see if anything comes of all this Twitter noise. It probably isn't.
With those three, I could see maybe something just because, like we said, they're all in the same spot, honestly. But let's transfer over from a little bit of UFC talk. Let's talk a little bit about boxing. So since our last show, there's been a whole lot of movement throughout the heavyweight division in boxing. We had Usyk with the upset over Joshua, which took the majority of the belts to Usyk, and then shortly after we had the Wilder and Fury trilogy, where we saw Tyson Fury win probably one of the greatest heavyweight boxing fights of all time.
Yeah, I mean that fight's a few weeks expired now, but we actually haven't had a discussion show. We've been doing interviews.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that, so I don't want to rehash the whole fight, but. Still, even a few weeks later, upon reflection, definitely one of the greatest heavyweight championship fights of the modern age,
mm-hmm.
of all time.
Yeah.
Even, I'd say. It was tremendous.
And Tyson Fury is now an all-time great, without a doubt.
Yes, he is definitely to be spoken of with the likes of the Aulis, the Frasers, the Whitakers, fucking Floyd. Not that he's the greatest of all time. There's a distinction to be made. And I like that even he's saying that. He's like, mm-hmm. I'm not the greatest of all time. I'm the greatest of my time.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to compare myself against men I can never step in the fucking in the ring with.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
So I don't want to have that argument because I don't know how that goes. But yes, he is the greatest heavyweight boxer of this era right now.
Well, and that's the thing is.
Without a doubt.
A lot of people, when they talk about the greatest of all time, they always look at their records. And I don't really think that's something it's really that serious. Because you look at someone, we're talking that way, I guess you could say Floyd's the greatest of all time, but then like you can't ignore that like Julio Cesar Chavez was literally won 109 fights in a row without a loss or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And someone like, you know, Ray Robinson, who freaking won 130 fights in a row. So there's no way.
Marciano, who went undefeated back in the day.
Yeah, it was 47 and 0?
49, I do
49,
believe.
Yeah. Those are just like records that will always stand that I don't think can really be quantified. Obviously, it's a record, so it is quantified, but I'm saying like the quality of wins are always going to be at the question. But like, I feel like the story and the fucking how you change your generation is really what makes someone the greatest of their time and the greatest of all time. I think Tyson Fury's story of how he was a guy who was the the best boxer in the world, but then got depressed, became alcoholic and a drug addict, and was completely out of shape, but then had his life like come back to him, and he fought for it, and he made sure that he was not forgotten and came back and did everything he said he was going to do. That makes him one of the greatest of all time.
It's amazing, and he's not done yet either.
Yeah, that's the best part. He's not done yet.
Because he didn't have to come back, and there would still be talk of how great he was after beating Klitschko. Mm-hmm. And they would be like, what could have been?
Yeah.
But to come back and then regain the titles and then have this epic trilogy against the most feared puncher in this era as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very reminiscent of what Muhammad Ali did years ago.
It's with, amazing.
You know what I mean? Like, yes. It's very, very reminiscent of, like, what happened in Ali's career, where Ali was the greatest in the world. And then, obviously, different circumstances, of course, but ends up having to take years off because of the military thing in Vietnam. And then he comes back and fights George Foreman, who fucking murdered Joe Frazier, who was Ali's biggest rival and best opponent ever. We literally watched him murder him in a round.
And at the time, Foreman was very feared, fearsome. He wasn't the cuddly grandpa who came back later in life.
Ali turned him into that person.
Yeah. He was just like Deontay Wilder is in this day. He was like, people were like, God damn, George Foreman's a mean, tough.
He's a mean motherfucker. I'd say if you really look at it, like a young George Foreman and freaking Deontay Wilder are probably the most comparable fighters ever. Like, if you talk about like punching power and ability, like they're very, very comparable. So I think it's and Ali's story is very, very like,
and
very close.
And the fact that you look at his family, he comes from a fighting family. Mm-hmm. I mean,
he's literally named after Mike Tyson.
And he's his name is Tyson Fury, and it's not a stage name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was, I mean, sometimes I'm just in awe, like, of how cool that story is. Maybe part of it is because I'm such a Mike Tyson fan, and I can sympathize and imagine naming your fucking son Tyson after Mike Tyson and then raising him in a fighting family as a boxer. And then to see him grow into this fucking gigantic man. He's 6'9".
Mm-hmm.
He's 275 pounds. To have that movement and that skill and the athleticism that he shows.
Oh, yeah.
And then his personality is outsized.
Mm-hmm.
It's this crazy thing. Like, there's a man who is clearly born in the right time to the right family, doing the right thing that he is meant to be doing on this fucking planet.
Yeah.
And it's, I think when he's said and done, because who knows where it ends up, because he could still unify these four fucking titles again and just keep writing this storybook thing. Or he could ride off into the sunset after this
Never
and still
again.
Be a fucking legend.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really amazing. And then you combine this with Anthony Joshua falling, not once but twice.
Yeah.
All right, first to Ruiz, which maybe you can write off as a fluke, right?
Yeah.
Because he comes back and he gets it back. But then he gets tooled up by fucking Usyk.
Yeah.
So Joshua's out of the conversation as the greatest of this era. Wilder in three fucking fights with Tyson Fury, aside from landing big punches that almost KO'd a man, was never in the fight.
Never.
I mean, going into this third fight, he'd won, what, two rounds out of, like, 30 or something?
Yeah, two or three, something like
that. You know, or 20. It was only a couple. And then, you know, he had his moments. You know, he did good in the first round. Fuck, he laid Tyson down twice and was it the fourth?
Fourth, yeah.
You know, but ultimately he got slept.
He got slept. And also, if it would have went to the cards, he would have been a landslide decision,
Tyson was way out.
Yeah.
It's an exciting time for heavyweight. And now we have this interesting matchup where, I mean, we've got Anthony Joshua getting the fucking rematch clause with Usyk, which was like a gentleman's agreement. Did you hear that? It wasn't actually in the contract. It was just like agreed to afterwards, and Usyk was like, yeah, cool, from what I understand. But I don't expect Anthony Joshua to do anything.
Yeah, me either. I feel like they're just wasting time with that fight. Like, honestly. I think the fights that make sense right now is for Fury and Usyk to unify and Joshua and Wilder to fight to see who is going to be the one to fight for the title first.
Well, we've got some mandatories going on. We've got Waylon White, which that now that shook up too. That was supposed to happen within the last week or two ago now at this point that we're recording this. You know, that was a mandatory for Fury. He was supposed to fight the winner of that, and then that fight falls off.
Yeah, I just don't have any kind of actual interest in seeing him and Waleen fight again. You know what I mean? Like, that first fight was enough for me.
I don't either. I mean, like, it was only interesting because
of the rounds? Right?
No, that was the one where Fury got that cut, and they almost, you know, it was a bad cut over his right eye.
Okay.
And there was some concern that the ref was going to stop the fight. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he still winds up winning a decision. Just Waleen wound up being a lot tougher.
Yeah. Who was it that he knocked out in two rounds? I thought that was Waleen for some reason. Either way, my point being is the same thing with Dillian White. Dillian White's freaking, he's lost to Joshua. Really think he has the skills to beat Fury? I don't think so.
No, he's not going to beat Fury. And Anthony Joshua, you know, as of some of the talking heads in boxing that I listen to were bringing up, he seems pretty comfortable with losing at this point.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem hungry.
He doesn't seem super outspoken about any of it either.
No, he's just like, yeah, whatever. Congratulations. And,
fucking sports, whatever.
Like, you know, like, I don't feel the hunger coming from him to get these titles back. Yeah. I don't think he can fuck with Usyk anyway. So.
And I think, if anything, I think of all the heavyweights, Joshua's the most of, like, a sportsman than, like, a prize fighter. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're never really seen Anthony Joshua talk a lot of shit. You've never really seen Anthony Joshua go out of his way to promote the fight. He's more of a guy who goes, he trains, he gets the job done. He wins, he loses, doesn't matter. But he always puts the work in.
Yeah, and he's got that British sportsmanship quality to him.
Yeah.
And never comes across as savage at all.
No.
Whereas Fury, I think, has a lot of sportsmanship as well.
Yeah.
However, he's got quite a bit of savage inside of him.
Yeah.
So, if you get my drift.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But yeah, it should be real interesting to see where we go from here.
Yeah, I'm curious if Fury winds up waiting with this White Waleen fight off until the Usyk Anthony fight is over, or what? If the WBC orders another mandatory, if they just have him fight Dillian White, just skip over the other dude.
Yeah, they could do that just because he fought Waleen before.
Yeah. I mean, because if anybody's getting skipped, it's going to be Waleen because of the loss. So.
Mm-hmm. Well,
if we can get the nonsense mandatories and rematches out of the way, there's some exciting things here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dude, unified titles fucking excite me. I'm a nerd about that shit. We've often talked about lineal champions. And, you know, to me, the heavyweight division is the most important in boxing. Of all the lineal titles you have across combat sports, the lineal boxing heavyweight title is the best. And to see Fury unify all four belts plus the lineal championship, please make this happen soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just everything people want as well. You know, we constantly talk about the problem with boxing is we never get the fights we want. And this is finally an opportunity for boxing to right that ship, unify some belts, and create. And although Fury's already a giant superstar and probably the belts are just more of like a formality, but the history of him being able to reunify is going to be huge for his legacy.
And he's such a showman too. We talk about his fighting skills and his ring entrances.
Yeah.
His mic stuff afterwards. I mean, some of it's cheesy, but I mean, like, he fucking sings. He comes out crazy. Did you see this last entrance?
Yeah,
I mean, it's always something new and fresh.
It was pretty great.
Like, that Apollo Creed one has been my favorite.
Oh,
so
yeah,
far.
That's
that
one of my favorite as
fucking,
well.
I mean,
that was top notch.
That's incredible, sir. Well, exciting times in boxing, bro.
Yep. So let's head back into some MMA. So
all right, word.
Let's talk about we have on Wednesday this week, which is kind of strange. We have the PFL Championship, which is normally fought on New Year's night, but is now on October 27th, which is headlined by Kayla Harrison taking on Taylor, I don't want to butcher this name, but Giardo?
I think it's Giardo.
Giardo?
But she's a decent fighter. Like, I saw the fight that she won to get her into the championships. Mm-hmm. But she's pretty raw, dude. I mean, she's coming into this 3-1.
Yeah.
And two of those fights were in this season's PFL.
Yeah. This is a huge fight for Kayla Harrison, though. Because what people, if you don't know, this is also Kayla Harrison possibly riding off into free agency with this as a statement.
Yeah, this is her last fight with the PFL that's signed, right?
Yeah.
So her contract is at an end. She has not extended, to the best of our knowledge. And she's going into a repeat of the Million Dollar Championships. The question is the pay, though. Because will she take less money to fight in a more prestigious organization?
I don't think she necessarily has to.
Well, it also depends on how you look at the pay, because it's not like she gets $1 million per fight in the PFL.
Well, yeah.
She gets $1 million in the championship fight, and she gets whatever else they pay her they don't make public via her contract.
Well, don't they get like a monthly also? There's like, it's not a fight by fight. It's like you get like a monthly like fixed rate.
That was my understanding pre-pandemic, and I would presume that they've at least started that up again.
Yeah.
But yeah, part of it was you get some cash every month, plus you get some shit
bonuses
when you fight. And then the big money in the championship.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like she has to sign and say, I'm getting $1 million per fight. Like, that won't be how it works.
But I do think, I don't know, man. I do think after this, there is a question of why would you accept anything less? You know, like if you're going to fight in the PFL, maybe I get what you're saying. But if she was going to go over to someone like a Bellator or a UFC, every fight is going to be a huge fight for her. Every fight is going to be, you know, a pay-per-view, a title fight, or a five-rounder for Kayla Harrison. There's no way she walks into the UFC and they go, okay, here's Macy Chase on, or here's fucking, you know.
No offense to Macy.
I'm being honest. Like, there's no way they're handing her someone who's in the top 10. Here's fucking, you know, any other person in the top 10. There's nobody in the top 10 that they're going to hand Kayla Harrison. It's Amanda Nunes or fucking, I don't know who else, or some interim belt. Because there's no way you hand anything else to Kayla Harrison other than a belt at this point. So how can you expect her to ask for anything less than $1 million?
And this is why part of it, I think she's going to Bellator. If she doesn't stay with PFL, I think she goes to Bellator because the 145-pound division in the UFC is a fucking joke. No offense to the women there, but let's not sugarcoat it either. There's no division. There's no top 10.
What women are there?
They don't even have a top 15 because there aren't 15 people. Mm-mm. They don't have a top 5 that I'm aware of.
No.
If they do, that's because that's the whole 5 that are there. To the best of my knowledge, it's like a top 3 or 4. I think there's 3 outside of Nunes. And so most of
Nunes,
them highlight down a bantamweight, too.
Yeah.
And fucking Kayla Harrison's not making bantamweight.
Yeah. It's like Megan Anderson, Nunes.
Right. And Holly Holm.
Holly Holm, who can flirt with 35. That's like the only person I feel like that they could give her a non-title fight against, and Kayla Harrison
would take
it.
Norma Dumont.
Yeah.
I mean, and no offense to Norma, but who's that?
Yeah.
Kayla come in and smoke her too. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean,
that's why it's a weird situation that Kayla Harrison's in.
If she goes to Bellator,
yeah,
then she has a chance to get sponsors to offset what Bellator maybe can't put in her paycheck, because she's a marketable personality too.
Yeah,
with the
for
Olympic
sure.
Shit, and all this stuff, and there's a big dog over there that she can slay.
Yeah, and she doesn't have to sign any long term deal. She's still 31 years old. She still has time. She could go sign maybe a 4-fight deal with Bellator, fight, you know, Cyborg and whoever else, and then head over to the UFC when she's like 34, 35. The story's already been created. I don't think she wants to fight Amanda Nunes because her and Amanda have been so close up to the point of her being in each other's corner in the last couple fights and showing up to each other's fights. Like,
throw that in the mix, too.
It just doesn't seem like there's a situation where she wants to fight Amanda. Not that she doesn't think she can beat her, because anybody should be able to be anybody if in their mind, you know. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's a little bit of hometown feel to having to fight one of your friends. It's too much.
Which I think that also weighs everything towards her going into Bellator and taking out, because I think she will. I think she beat Cyborg. And then reigning over there for a little while.
Yeah.
And seeing what things shake out with the UFC at that point as far as what they're doing with 145 if and when Nunes retires.
Yeah.
Because there's been talk of her retirement for several fights now, which is at least indicative that we're having the we're at least having that conversation. Like, well, she may not be saying it, but we're all talking about it. So who knows what's going to go on with 145 there.
And not even to take it to another level also, it also kind of gives Amanda a way out. Amanda can hand her dominance over to her friend, mm-hmm. who will then carry the torch for X amount of time until she's ready to let it go, you know?
Right, until Clarissa Shields come knocking at the door finally, years from now, possibly.
Possibly. That's another one I want to talk about because she's also fighting on this card.
Yeah, Clarissa she's Shields, having her second fight, right?
Second fight, yep. Fighting.
Now, this should be very interesting. So I'm actually expecting a lot of evolution. Like, look, she did really good mm-hmm. in that first fight. Now, admittedly, it was against not the best of fighters. It was someone she should be fighting, though. That was exactly. I mean, the woman had, I think, 9 fights, but her record was like 3-6.
Yeah.
All right. But Clarissa saw adversity. She was taken down a lot. And mm-hmm. she hung through all that and got through. And I expect to see some evolution now that she's got that out of the way. She knows a bit what it actually feels like in a cage to fucking have somebody on top of you, not in training, not at the gym, in a real-life fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm real interested in that. I'm glad she's going to be on this card.
It seems like she's begun to diversify her striking game as well because I watch a lot of her social media and stuff. Mm-hmm. She's been posting a lot of videos of her doing a lot of kicking with Winklejohn.
Winklejohn, he's a good coach for this, I feel.
Well, Holly Holm is a perfect example. Holly Holm and Clarissa Shields are literally in the same camp. Not only that, but also they've lived the same situation. You know what I mean? She's a former boxer who moved over to mixed martial arts, and their camp is what she attributes a lot of her evolution to. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. That's they've written this plan out before and brought it to success with Holly.
Mm-hmm.
And Clarissa's an outstanding athlete.
Yeah. That's one thing that people don't realize is she has a leg up on competition just based on her own athletic gifts to begin with.
I don't know anything about her opponent. It's Abigail Montez. Mm-hmm. I'm no she's disrespect 2-0. To Abigail. She's 2-0?
Yeah.
Okay, well. That's who she should be fighting too. I mean, which is 1-0, obviously.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see if it's more of the same. I'll be concerned if she gets taken down and handled much the same way.
Yeah.
That'll
be a red flag. Some red flags.
She's having a hard time picking some of this up, I would say.
Yeah.
Especially against a fighter with less experience than her first opponent.
True.
But who knows? Maybe the kid's a jiu-jitsu whiz or something.
Yeah. Never know. But I just don't see them necessarily, matching her up with somebody like that.
Dude, the PFL is going to make legit matchmaking. I'm not saying that they're not, but believe me, they want Clarissa Shields to win.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's without a doubt.
They're desperate for homemade stars. They've done pretty well with Kayla, but she's on her way out.
On her way out, yeah.
And Clarissa has more of a name in combat sports than Kayla did because she's coming from judo.
Yeah.
And she has the Olympic fame and all, but that's not the rub that a lot of people think it is when it comes time to viewership.
Yeah,
Kayla's built her name up, though. Clarissa comes in with a bit of a known commodity already.
No offense to anybody who does judo, but like I can't imagine judo is the highest viewed sport on the Olympic ladder. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
So,
and that's why we don't watch judo
on
Friday nights.
That much. There's not that much fame that's attributed to her Olympic,
their
performances.
Their championships don't even get the press that like jiu-jitsu does that I'm aware of. I mean, not that I go searching for them, but you're not seeing judo championship results on MMA sites I've ever seen.
Yeah,
they'll post, the worlds for jiu-jitsu.
yeah,
the ADCC stuff and everything, mm-hmm, and wrestling as well.
Yeah, that's why Kayla Harrison is, she's like kind of snuck up on the world as like the next biggest thing in women's MMA for sure.
She's pretty good on the mic too.
Yeah, she's hella good on the mic. Yeah. So, one thing we actually didn't plan on talking about, but something I have to talk about now because it's come to me since our last show. John Jones has been dismissed from Jackson Wink and is told he's not allowed to come back.
Well, conditionally.
Conditionally.
It's by Winklejohn.
Yeah.
He's still keeping Greg Jackson and Brandon Gibson are just going to go work with him out of his house. And if he proves that he stopped drinking, then he's allowed back in the gym. But.
Yeah, that's all.
That is what happened.
Yeah. It's something I do think we need to talk about for a second. Because it's pretty big. To turn away the greatest fighter of all time away from your gym because of outside things that are damning for sure. I'll give you that. They're definitely damning. But.
I mean. All we know is that for certain. And I'm not speaking in defense or not in defense. I'm just saying facts as I know them are. As we've seen a photo of his fiance with some marks on her, and it's like her hair pulled. Is that correct? And like, but we don't have any context.
Yeah.
Other than Jones was charged with like a misdemeanor battery, and then like
and then got charged for hitting
a police car, which is
stupid as fuck.
It's stupid, but let's also call that for what it is.
It's like resisting arrest.
I've been arrested before. Yeah. Multiple times, okay? And y'all, everybody's got a fucking TV. And I'm not talking recently, people. Mm-hmm. This was in my nefarious childhood. not like last week or anything.
Yeah.
Years and years ago. But anyways, cops always add trumped up fucking charges to make everything coming down on somebody worse. And believe me, headbutting the cop car as a felony is some trumped up bullshit.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, that's for sure.
That's just cops adding layer upon layer.
Yeah. Well, I can't blame him.
Not excusing John here. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, but I can't blame him when, from what the story has come out since then, that there was four or five cops there. They all circled around him, and he said, "Do you know who I am, motherfuckers? I will fuck all you up." So I'd imagine that's probably why they threw those extra charges on there.
Yeah, probably. And look, I don't know how big his fiance is. I've never seen her in person, but she doesn't seem to be waifish. Like, I don't get the impression she's like 5'2".
Yeah, no, she's around probably like 5'.
I'm just saying, John Jones is a big man, though.
Yeah.
And he's training to be a heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just assume that if he like punched her, we would see dramatic effects of that on
her. He would be in jail still right now if he actually like fucking.
This isn't like
beat her up.
Like, and I'm not excusing Floyd either. Floyd's a fucking ass bag, okay? But the dude is like 140 pounds, soaking fucking wet. He might be fucking smacking a woman bigger than him, for fuck's sake. Not that I'm not saying that it excuses it. All I'm saying is the pictures that we saw of his girlfriend, in my opinion, did not look like he had hit her.
Yeah.
Because that's a fucking huge ass man. And I'm not sure what I'm looking at here. I don't know. I mean, so I don't know what happened. It's not like we know. Like, Floyd hit his girlfriend. We know that. He was charged. He went to jail. He served time. He's a fucking ass bag. And I'm not excusing John. Clearly some fucked up shit's going on here.
Yeah.
But I'm also not willing to just be like he's a woman beater. Like, we don't really know. We should just wait. Maybe he is. Maybe he's not.
Whenever these kind of situations come out, it's hard to jump to conclusions. All I'm saying is for him to get dismissed from the gym that he built is pretty significant.
It is pretty significant. And I don't disagree with that. And it's probably warranted because, I mean, he's telling four cops he's going to fuck them up. And that's not just like
asshole. Yeah, like what was he on? Like, let's just be real. Like, there's not a lot of situations in my life where I was like, I get you're John Jones, you're the best fighter in the world, but there's a very, very fine line between getting resisting arrest and standing four cops around you and telling, try me, motherfuckers. You know.
Well, yeah, like, what I was saying was plenty of drunk fucking guys have told the cops, go fuck with me, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
But none of them.
It's different when it's John Jones and you're in Vegas and the cops know goddamn well that that's the baddest dude on the planet, yeah. And he's huge, and he's like,
and he's
I could
up.
Fuck you up.
Yeah, and he's faded, drunk. Too, yeah. Like,
that's a scary moment for police, because that's not me or you or some, like, they could get fucked up. Clearly.
Probably all of them.
So, yeah, I'm, you know, he shouldn't be doing these things, and he clearly can't handle his intoxicants, man. Like, the man likes to party, and it's a problem, bro. We're still talking about John Jones doing stupid shit when he's fucked up.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just not be fucked up at some point. I mean, you're a grown-ass man with kids.
That's kind of what he said at this point. He's, in his first public statement, he was like, I found out throughout my life that me and liquor don't mix and just makes me into a bad person. It's like, I'm glad you finally figured it out, but man, it took a hell of a lot for you to figure that out.
Dude, I don't believe it for 2 seconds. You didn't figure that out when you were, like, drunk and crashed your Bentley or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah, you didn't figure it out when you were drunk and fell asleep in your car.
Figured it out when you, like, were smoking weed in your car and ran the red light and then crashed into the car that had the pregnant lady in it.
Yeah.
Then you ran away.
Yeah. Yep.
You didn't figure that out when you got stripped twice of your
titles fucking sniffing coke.
Similar shit partying.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying. I fucking love watching John Jones fight. I can't wait to see his next fight. If it's pay-per-view, I'll fucking buy it.
Yeah.
I'll anxiously watch all the shit, but I'm tired of the... Like, you're a grown-ass man, bro. Like, I got fucked up when I was younger, too. A lot of people do. And at some point, you go, grown-ass man with kids.
Yeah.
And if you really hit your girl, I mean, that's a whole nother level.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that was that we were looking at there. And I hate the fact that everybody jumps to fucking conclusions about it. Mm-hmm. Because I think if he would have struck her, I don't think it would be any misdemeanor fucking battery. Mm-hmm. Which is...
No way.
I'm pretty sure spitting on someone is misdemeanor battery. Like, that's how widely encompassing of a minor bullshit that charge is.
Yeah.
I don't know, bro. He's a fuck-up, though.
It's a fuck-up situation. Fucked-up one. Well... We'll see where that turns into in the future. Now, let's get into our upcoming pay-per-view/not-pay-per-view, UFC 267, which is not a pay-per-view, but it is a numbered UFC card.
So my understanding, it was originally supposed to be a pay-per-view, and then they decided not to rename it, and they were going to put it on ABC for free.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't heard about that ABC shit.
Yeah, I've seen it's on ESPN Plus.
I just, maybe it is, and we somehow don't know, because I don't actually watch regular TV like that.
I don't think it would be on ABC, though, because it's one of those ones that's going to be at, like, noon. Because it's over the pond in freaking Abu Dhabi.
I don't know what they're doing. But it's not a pay-per-view, but it is a pay-per-view. It's a free pay-per-view.
Yeah.
That's probably what they'll call it, since it's a numbered ones are always pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. The point we're trying to make here. I like the main fight and the co-main.
Mm-hmm.
Those are good.
I actually like the whole card, to be honest.
I have some people I'm really rooting for on the card. What stands out to you that you want to talk about, Paul?
Well, let's just talk about if there was no such thing as COVID, there would really be... This card would be in Russia. Like this is the Russian card. These are all the best guys from that region of the world all on one card. Like, literally.
Yeah, clearly some travel restrictions going on. I mean, they just implemented some here, but there's probably something going on in Russia, too. But, yeah, they've been waiting to get these guys on this card.
So let's start from the bottom of the main card. So, opens with a banger. You got Magomed Ankalaev taking on Volkan Ozdemir.
Actually, can I rewind it a little bit before we get there?
What's up?
There's one fight on the prelims I'm intrigued with, which is Li Jinglang versus, how do we say his name? Kamzat Chimaev.
Yep.
Kamzat Chimaev. I don't know. I don't like the guy. I'm not a fan. And I'm really hoping Li Jinglang, who I've never been a fan of either, takes it to him.
Yeah. Well, he's coming off that big knockout win over Ponzinibbio, which has shot him into the top 10.
And he's a tough, mean, dirty fighter. All right?
He's gritty.
And I don't mean that as quite as negative as it sounds, but I mean, the reason I'm not a fan of this guy is he committed the most egregious eye poke I've ever seen in combat sports. I mean...
Yeah, I can't deny that.
Like, you can Google his name and eye poke, and I mean, it wasn't a poke. He just slowly took his fucking thumb and inserted it into a man's eye socket.
While he was getting guillotined.
Yeah. And then just kept it there.
Until he let go.
Until the guillotine was released. I've never seen, I was waiting, I thought the eyeball would fucking pop out, man.
Well, and it was funny because the referee in the fight was so focused on whether he was going to tap or not, he didn't even see his eyes were getting gouged out.
Yeah, it wasn't a poke. He just stuck his thumb in his eye and left it there.
Yeah.
It was fucking crazy. Clearly purposeful.
And then on the other side, you got Chimaev, who's coming off COVID to the point where people said that he was going to retire and he was going to die and shit. He was coughing blood and trying to train through it and... Yeah. All this stupid shit that he should have never been doing.
He actually did retire until that dictator fuck over there in Chechnya.
Yeah, said suddenly some, like,
no, he's not retiring. Yeah. Who knows what was said behind the scenes.
True.
And then suddenly he's fighting again.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder what kind of toll that could have took on his body.
Massive toll.
Yeah.
The man, I may not be a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly it's due to his personal shit.
Yeah.
Like, he's a hell of a fighter.
Yeah.
But, like, he's a beast. And for him to come out publicly and be like, I'm too fucked up to continue, he's not a guy that's going to say that lightly.
Exactly.
And so I think he was definitely fucked up. And he was legit when he said he was retiring. And he's forced into coming back. So I expect it to have some effect, yes. And he's fighting a guy that's going to be he's tough. It's big.
I think it's a winnable fight for him, but I do think it's his biggest test so far.
I think it's a tougher fight than, like, Leon Edwards for some reason. I don't know why. Because I think Leon Edwards smoked Li Jinglang, but I just feel like this fight, these two match up the way they are, I think it's a tougher fight. I don't know why. I'm probably just high.
I disagree with that, but I do think this is a tough fight for Chimaev.
Well, I'm really hoping that we see some end to this hype train. I don't support this dude.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think this is where it will end. I think it's going to be somebody higher up into the top 10, but this could
probably
be.
Probably right. I'm just a hater. I'm not going to sugarcoat it or act like I'm not, dude. I'm a straight hater.
Yeah. So, I get it.
You know,
I'm not a big fan.
It is what it is. That's the nice thing about the sport. You don't got to like everybody. You can actually root for people to get their ass kicked, which normally you wouldn't want to wish on somebody.
Exactly. Yeah, so bottom of the main card, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Magomed Arkhalayev coming off two really kind of strange fights with with your boy. And now he's taking on Volkan Ozdemir, who's really, really in need of a big win here.
You talk about Ion Kutileva?
Yeah.
The Hulk?
Yeah, he had those two weird fights with Ion. And then now Volkan on the other side, though, he's what, lost three or four in a row?
Yeah, his pipe train came to a crash and burn.
Yeah. He was once,
title challenger.
Yeah. Once a title challenger, now almost kind of a gatekeeper of the light heavyweight division.
In like 24 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
still
win,
revive it. You could turn it around.
I was just going to say, a win like this could turn it around because we're talking about two guys who are both in the top 15. And anything can happen, you know?
I don't
both
like
these
this guy
guys
either, so I'm really rooting for Volkan Ozdemir.
Yeah?
Yeah.
See, I kind of like Magomed. He's good. He's top-notch.
I'm not decrying their fighting skills. They just do such things in their
squad. Yeah,
in their squad and in their personal lives. I have a hard time overlooking that shit to root for them at all.
Yeah,
so
I'm
like, fuck those dudes.
Yeah, I feel it.
So that's all. Like, I'm not saying he's a shitty fighter or nothing, dude.
Yeah.
He's legit. Hope he gets his ass kicked.
Well, then we got a pretty good heavyweight fight. We got Volkan, Alexander Volkan. There's so many Volkans on this.
Right.
You know, you gotta be exact
Spock's
here.
Spock's gonna be out in the crowd with all these Volkans on here.
You're an idiot.
Yeah.
Alexander Volkov versus Marcin Tybura.
Dude, Tybura's on a fucking tear of late.
Yeah, but I think this is a bad matchup for him. I just feel like Volkov is a little too long. You know what I mean? He's so good at like keeping distance and not and you know staying behind his jab and really using effective like long range punches. I think that's going to be the difference in this fight. Tybura, if he does win, he's going to make it a dirty up close in the pocket kind of fight. That's what he has to do, because I think if he lets Volkov stay on the outside and uses kicks and his length, I just don't think he's going to have any answer for it.
Well, he's been surprising lately, Tybura has.
Yeah. He's coming off that knockout, was it two fights ago, of Greg Hardy?
Yes, that was very enjoyable.
Really got I knew me, you would enjoy like, that's why I brought
got
it up.
Me on his train. It brings a smile to my face.
Yeah.
Again, the beauty of combat sports, specifically boxing and MMA, is you can see villains or people that you decide are villains, whether mm-hmm. they are actually or not, is yeah. our own personal interpretations, but get knocked the fuck out by other people, and no one goes to jail or gets in trouble.
No one goes. That is true.
But, yeah, I mean, Volkov, he's about 33-9 right now. Tybura mm-hmm. is 22-6, which for a couple heavyweights is fine.
A lot of fights, actually, for both of them.
Bolkin's big, though. He's 6'6", man. Yeah. Although they're about the same size and weight.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think with all that height, he'd have some reach advantage, but it's only 2 inches.
Here. Really? Only yeah. 2 inches? I'm surprised
about
that.
80 to 78. Tybura's got some gorilla arms on him.
Yeah, that's interesting.
He's only 6'2".
That's really interesting, actually, yeah. because that kind of changes my outlook on this one. Because I just looking at them, like, face-to-face, like, you know, it would seem that Volkov would have a much bigger reach advantage.
I was expecting him to as well. It's not like I had Tybura's reach memorized. I was just, you know, when we mm-hmm. were doing research. It's amazing to me that it's that big. I like Tybura for the win here, honestly.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, but my brain's telling me Volkov's going to get it done. Now,
I mean, he's been the last time he lost mm-hmm. was to Augusto Sakai at the Cowboy versus Gaethje fight in 2019. Mm-hmm. And since then, he beat Sergey Spivak by decision. He decisioned Maxim Grishin, decisioned Ben Rothwell, but then he TKO'd Greg Hardy, TKO'd Walt Harris.
Yeah.
Which are pretty,
those know, are pretty big wins.
At heavyweight, a yeah. 5-fight win streak is impressive, no matter what the names are yeah. that you're facing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ben Rothwell and Walt Harris are definitely legitimate
quality wins
yeah. there. The Hardy one can be debated.
Mm-hmm.
And Sergey Spivak's a decent win, too,
yeah. know,
to kick this all off with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was coming off back-to-back losses before then. So he had a rough stretch.
Well, that was the thing. He had that rough stretch and was almost out of the UFC. And then completely has now turned it around into a 5-fight win streak. And, you know, that's mixed martial arts for you, though. You know what I mean? One thing I think everyone can love about the sport is losses happen because there's so many variables out there that when you take a loss, your ability to come back is really how your will and how your, you know, as your ability as a fighter is really, you know, rated. Like, no one looks at someone and goes, oh, he's 2-0, he's one of the best in the world. You know what I mean?
No.
But someone who is, you know, 17-3, 20-5, but had fucking fought all high-level opponents, you can look at them and be like, wow, that's a good body of work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. So I like him with the, I guess it'd be a bit of an upset. I haven't seen the line on it, but I would figure that's Volkov's going to be favored here.
Yeah. Volkov, you know, he has a tendency to drop some of these higher big level fights, though. You know what I mean? Where it's not necessarily all the stakes in the world are on the line, but anybody with momentum, he tends to have trouble with.
All right. What about that next fight?
Next fight at lightweight, we got Islam Makhachev taking on Dan Hooker. Short notice fight.
Hooker
coming off his really impressive win against Little Gaslam. And
Little Gaslam, he's just changed his name to that.
That's
huh?
his new name. I don't care. I don't care. No. Nah. But
hey, you care if we load up some of that OG in this bubbler?
Yes, sir.
I just want to switch up the flavors here.
But this is going to be a very interesting fight for, I think, everyone involved, because this is the ultimate, you know, striker versus grappler contest.
It's Especially, yeah. We're talking about these Russian fighters on here. I mean, this is it. This is Khabib's guy. This is his protege.
This is his boy.
This is the next, you know, hype for that region of Chechnya as far as, like, a champion.
Yeah, and next more than guy any to, like, of their AKA, other guys. Too.
Yeah, and AKA is all on these fucking guys' nuts, too, so yeah. And he's good. I mean, he's 20-1. Hooker's 21-10. Hooker's got some size on him, though. I mean, he's coming in 6 feet tall to 5'8" for Makhachev. And he does have some reach advantage. Hooker's got 75-inch reach to the 70-inch. But, you know, this is going to wind up going to the ground.
I have some insider knowledge that Dan Hooker's been training with some really good grapplers coming up to this fight. And obviously nothing can be changed overnight, but it's not, I don't think it's.
Well, see, it wouldn't be overnight because he's been training for grappling his whole life.
But, yeah, but you know what I mean. You can't just bring.
He could make an incremental improvement in a fight camp with the right people.
You could, but.
Yeah. But you got some info.
Yeah, no, I just know some guys from that wrestled D1 that are training with him right now, like some guys that I knew from like high school and through like, you know, some of the circles of, you know, wrestling throughout my childhood, at least, that have been training with him leading up to this fight. And I know for a fact those guys can have a very, very high-level top game that I think that he's getting used to being handled with every single day of his camp. You know what I mean?
And this will be the best striker that Islam has seen.
Absolutely, yeah.
Far and away.
I mean, yeah. And that's his only blemish on his career was a flash KO early in his UFC career. You know what I mean? So I'll really be curious to see how this goes.
It's no secret who I'm going to be rooting for again.
Dan Hooker's one of my favorite fighters, so I'm definitely going with Dan Hooker.
I mean,
I don't dislike Islam, but I just actually am a huge fan of Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker's literally one of my favorite fighters to watch. Every single fight, win or lose, in a Dan Hooker fight is going to be a fucking knockdown, drag-out war, and he's going to give every single bit of everything he's got, whether he's getting blown out of the water, like we saw in the Edson Barboza fight, where he literally just got destroyed but still kept in and showed, like, crazy will, or it's going to be like a Paul Felder fight where it was just a bloodbath, but he just showed that he had stronger will and just savagery to pull out a win like that. You know what I mean? Those are the kind of fights that I like to watch. And that's why Dan Hooker's just one of the most exciting fighters in the UFC for me.
And this is a massive test for Makhachev. I mean, his highest level of competition up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in my opinion, he had the Nick Lentz fight and then immediately after that, the Gleason-Tybau fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we're talking those were 2017 and then 2018 back to back.
Yeah.
And since then, I mean, yeah, he's 20-1, so obviously he's rattled off a bunch of wins, mm-hmm. but he's winning a bunch of guys that most of these guys aren't in the UFC anymore.
Mm-hmm.
His latest win against Drew Dober, I mean, it was Thiago Moises, you know, Davi Ramos, John Johnson. He hasn't faced any high-level opponents.
Yeah.
So we're going to find out.
Mm-hmm. I'm taking Hooker.
Taking Hooker too, but that's just my fan pick.
Well, do you think Hooker has the skills to keep it off the ground?
Islam's skills are. I mean, he's not Khabib, but maybe he's better. We just haven't seen him tested like that. We don't really fucking know. He's fighting guys that he
I wouldn't
should
say
be fighting,
he's better. I'd say he's more well-rounded, but I would.
His
I wouldn't
punching
say he's
is a
better.
Bit better. I mean, he's not.
I don't think
good.
He's as powerful as Khabib was.
He's got some KOs on him, but, I mean, it's fighting.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to KO Dan Hooker.
No. No way. I think if it goes south, the way I see finishing for Hooker is in some kind of submission. But if it goes south for Islam, I think it could be him not being able to take Hooker down and just getting battered on the feet. Because I don't think their striking is comparable whatsoever.
Well, moving to the co-main event, which I am most excited about this fight here. I'm actually a big fan of both of these guys. We've got the interim bantamweight title fight because Aljamain Sterling is still dealing with neck injuries and pinched nerves and messed up vertebrae in his neck and can't fight. So this is an interim title that I agree with.
For once.
I think Peter Yan should definitely be, or Petra, you know, I call him Peter. It's just a slip of the tongue. I know that's not his actual name, but I think Yan is definitely deserving. Corey Sandhagen, I was initially surprised, but I guess Rob Font turned it down.
Yeah.
He's fighting, he wanted to fight Aldo.
Aldo, yeah. Which doesn't make any sense to me. But okay.
It just makes sense right here because Dillashaw's out. I mean, normally you would think it would be Dillashaw and Yan in this position, just if injuries weren't at play. But then, so because Sandhagen's coming off a loss here. But
yeah.
Whatever. He's there. He lost to Dillashaw. Now he's here for this. Very intriguing fight.
I'm just being honest here. Based on the outcome of this fight, the waters could get so much more muddier than they already are at bantamweight. Like, if Corey Sandhagen pulls this off, we're talking who fights for the belt next. Because, yeah, it makes sense. He's the interim champ. He fights Aljamain. But then you have Dillashaw, who you already promised a title shot off a win. You have Rob Font fighting Jose Aldo in a couple weeks. If he wins that fight, then we're talking, how do you deny that guy for a title shot? You still have Yan, because Yan was the champion, was handily beating Aljo, and then, you know, he committed an illegal knee, which ended the fight. So there's just so much, like, there's such a line at the end of the, you know what I mean? At where Aljamain Sterling is at the top, and just everybody else is kind of, and you have to look at it this way too, is like, even if Sandhagen does get the belt, TJ Dillashaw literally beat him 4 months ago.
Yeah, this is very, very convoluted, and Sandhagen, should he get this, in my opinion, will become probably the oddest
interim
champ when you look at the situation that we've seen in the UFC. Because if you take Dillashaw out for a minute and put him on a pin, then if he beats Yan, then he's actually got more of a claim to the quote-unquote real title than Aljamain Sterling, who has the real title, quote-unquote, right now, has.
Yeah.
Okay, because he actually would be beating the guy who held the title, whereas, like you said, Sterling won by default.
Mm-hmm.
But then neither of these guys are the actual... If you want to get technical, I know you hate this, but the lineal champion, because TJ Dillashaw was stripped. He never got beat in the cage at bantamweight.
Yeah.
He had to actually technically relinquish the belt before he was stripped. So he's still waiting in the wings as the champion linearly, and he has a pretty heavy claim to the real, unquote, champion as well.
Yeah.
And what a fucking mix-up. You're going to have Sterling with a claim to the title. You're going to have Sandhagen. And you're going to have Dillashaw.
And then Yan, who technically was whooping the quote-unquote champion.
Yan, who, it was all a bizarre situation.
Especially, and then all the way at the back, you got Rob Font, who's on a fucking, like 6-7 fight win streak in the UFC. Which
yeah,
is like,
because
Jesus.
Of the severity and uncertainty around Sterling's, Aljo's injury, we could see an interim have to defend here as well.
Or we could see a situation where the champion is stripped due to medical reasons. It's happened in the past. We've seen UFC champs have to relinquish their belts because of, you know, GSP, like in Frank Mir.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of people.
It's a crazy situation. If Yan
we'll see
wins,
how it plays out.
It's not quite so crazy.
Yeah.
Because he was the former champ. Mm-hmm. And then if he could just deal with Aljo and then fight Dillashaw or the winner of
or
that
Font,
fight, Dillashaw,
yeah.
Whatever. I think Dillashaw has to go before Font. I'm sorry. Like,
I don't know. What if Font just goes
lost.
Out there? If he goes out there and he KOs Jose Aldo, how do you deny him as the number one contender?
Because there's this guy in front of him already, and it just sucks to be that.
Is he
in
front of him in the rankings, though? I don't think so. I think Font and Dillashaw, I think Font's... two and Dillashaw's three.
That would only be due to Dillashaw's inactivity coming into play because how could he be? Dillashaw's never lost.
No,
belt.
I agree with you, but I'm just saying, it's a
befuddled situation.
Fucking lineal shit. You know, I don't hold merit to your lineal bullshit, Jared.
Well, many do, my friend. many, many do.
But yeah, I don't know, man. This is actually a really, really close fight in my opinion, because Corey Sandhagen, one thing about him is no matter how what kind of pace and what kind of ferocity that Petr Yan's going to bring at him, he has the ability to end the fight at any point. He's one of those guys who just throws so many crazy techniques that if he lands one of those crazy knees or a, you know, spinning back kick or some crazy grappling situation happens and he catches Yan in a submission, I would not be surprised. You know what I mean? Like, it won't be like a huge, oh my God, I can't believe, of course, Sandhagen pulled that off, because he's now become known for that at this weight class. You know, even in fights he lost, like the Dillashaw fight, there was times where he caught Dillashaw in some really, really bad situations where he could have possibly ended the fight, in some crazy situations where he didn't. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that could very well happen here again, but I do think he is more and more live of a dog than we've ever seen.
Bantamweight's an exciting division right now, man.
Fuck yeah, it is.
You got these young studs, too, that are just waiting in the wings at some point, you know, like O'Malley, Paddy Pimblett. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact both these guys are basically refusing to fight any of these big dogs right now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Although Pimblett's at a weight class above, I'm just using him as an example. You know, obviously he's a lightweight, but you get, it's just the same situation. You got these younger fighters.
Yeah, these guys
who
are on these lower level contracts that are getting offered these huge fights, and they're just like, that's cool.
Well, that brings us to the main event, though, which sees Jan, the Polish power.
Yep.
Lachowicz defend his title his third title fight, but second title defense against resurging Glover Teixeira.
Mm-hmm.
Man, what a surge this guy's been on.
This is the moment for Glover. I think if Glover wins this fight, he walks off. I don't think he fights again after this if he wins the belt.
Oh, I agree. And it would be epic.
Epic.
Dude, drop the fucking mic and walk off.
Son. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of power in that cage come Saturday. That's all I know, because both those guys can throw bombs.
Yeah, he's 47 years old making this again. And for those of you listening that may not know, you know, his story, we won't tell the whole thing, but he was always in the early years like this mythical guy that you always heard about if you're a hardcore MMA fan in Brazil, who couldn't get here and fight because of visa problems for like a fucking decade.
Yeah, and he was Chuck Liddell's one of his like main training partners.
Yeah,
as well.
When Chuck was the man.
Was the shit.
Yeah. And so when he finally made it here, he actually got here a little bit past his prime already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he gets to the title, and unfortunately there was a guy holding the belt named John Jones, who's the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
And so there was it. That was his moment. He made it, and then it was gone. But then all this shit happens, and Glover's still hanging in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly he goes on this fucking surge now.
He's won, what, 5 in a row?
Mm-hmm. And he's sitting here right back in contention, or not in contention, fighting for the title.
Yeah.
Like, he's coming off the Thiago Santos sub. Before that, he beat Anthony Smith, TKO. He split-decisioned Nikita Krylov. He beat the aforementioned Ian Kutalaba, the Hulk, fucking choked him out, and he choked out Carl Robertson.
Yeah.
He lost a decision to Corey Anderson before that, and we all see there's no shame in losing a decision to Corey Anderson.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously top, top level as well. And then he, you know, he had a win over Misha Krishnov. Then he did lose to, he got KO'd by Gustafsson.
Mm-hmm.
Then I won't go through the rest of his record.
Because we'll be here all day.
Right. But he reels off 5 wins here.
Yeah.
And the last two, Anthony Smith and Thiago Santos, I mean, these were highly ranked opponents at the time.
At the time, they were the last two to fight Jones.
Yeah, coming off of title fights with the champ. And he made short work. I mean, he TKOs one and subs the other after punching him.
And honestly, the beatdown of Smith, I think, was like the most eye-opening, because just the way he was able to just take Anthony Smith down and just pound his face in. I think he knocked out his front teeth too, didn't he? Something like that.
He fucked him up, man.
Yeah, like
Anthony Smith
him up
is
bad.
A big dude. Like, we've met him in person. He's a large man. He's bigger than Glover.
And he's a very skilled fighter. To do that to him is fucking crazy.
He fucked his world up. I was shocked. I thought that was the end. I was like, this is Smith's comeback fight right here. He's going to smoke Glover Teixeira.
Even since then, he's looked great. That's the crazy part. That just shows, like, Glover is such a seasoned vet that, like, he's a live dog in any fight. Like, honestly. Like, this, I don't know if he's going to be able to pull this off because I think Jan is in the midst of his prime as a fighter. But I don't know. If he pulls it off, it'll definitely be a storybook ending to one of the best, like, careers of any MMA fighter ever. He's a legend of the sport for sure.
Yes.
With win or lose, he's still a legend of the sport. But this would be a hell of a way to cap it all off.
Dude, I mean, I'm a big fan of the Polish power.
Oh, me too. I like him a lot.
And it's hard, but that fairy tale ending for Teixeira would be so cool.
Be legendary.
I wouldn't want to see him like stick around and get beat down and lose to somebody.
Yeah. But you know what else is legendary? The Polish power.
Who are you picking, my friend?
Jan. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I got to go with Jan, too. I mean, I'll be happy as shit. Like, if next week we're talking about Teixeira's big win, I'm stoked.
It would be huge. But I think Jan is just in the smack dab in the middle of his prime as a fighter.
Coming off his win over Adesanya. Yeah, man. Solidified himself. I don't think he's going anywhere. Mm-mm. Good for Teixeira to even make it back.
Oh, I know, yeah.
For either way, though, I think he retires if he loses here.
I think win or lose, he retires.
Yeah. Same. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that about wraps our show up for the day.
I think it does, my friend. It's been enjoyable. We're going to finish off the Swede. Hope you all enjoyed it as well. If you're new to the show, you can catch us on all the major podcast outlets. Everywhere you get them, you'll find us. You can Google us. You can go to the website. Where's that at, Paul?
SWATMA.com, or you can head over there, click the gear button, and support the podcast.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Peace.
Later.